Would you please join me in a word of prayer?
Lord, let the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all those assembled prove acceptable in your sight, my strength, my rock, my redeemer. Amen. Well, welcome back, not just if you've been somewhere else for church, but welcome back to this series that has kind of a little here, a little there. It was intentional that way because the series is based on a Ravi Zacharias book called Jesus Among Secular Gods. And if you've ever read tried to pronounce it because it's really much harder than you might think, tried to read Ravi Zacharias, you know he's a kind of a scholarly guy. The words I use are going to be a lot more simple than the words he uses. He debates people, and I love reading him, but I know he's not necessarily for everybody. This is a 7-week series, and I thought, can I do that to these people? And the good news is, I love you people. I love you, and I would not give you 7 straight weeks of this. So we've kind of hit a little bit here and a little bit there. But the subject is, it's not just Jesus among all these secular gods. I think that we are among secular gods as well. And those gods end with the isms. We'll just actually touch on these and refresh your memory if you've forgotten some of these. We had scientism that we talked about in week 2, actually, after we talked about the importance of a worldview. And scientism says that science can not only answer some questions, but ultimately and eventually it can answer all questions. And all these isms, they have a grain of real value and truth in them, but they're not the whole truth. And as we discussed, science can answer a lot of questions, important questions. I love science, but it can't answer all questions. Even given all the time in the world, it can never answer questions about morality and purpose in our lives. And to find those answers, we have to go outside mere science. A week after that, we talked about pluralism, which said, you know, there's many roads to the mountaintop. Eventually, what it says is all religions are equally valid, equally true, and equally impactful. And as we discussed there, that's not actually true. By their very claims, certain religions can't both be true. They're contradictory. And when we looked at how they impact the world, not to pat Christianity on its back, Christianity makes a very different impact into the world, positive impact, than other religions do. Week after that, we talked about humanism, where if you're going to be in an atheist situation, we have no one else to turn to but ourselves. Humanism says we must therefore rescue ourselves, and one of the important presumptions it makes is that people are basically good. And we talked about some people who began as humanists. There was a historian in particular who, by studying history, realized, whoops, no, we're not actually so good. And so again, we have to turn outside ourselves if we're going to answer all the questions and find an acceptable way to live. Well, this week we're talking about relativism. Let me give you a definition right off the bat, and we'll work with that in just a moment. Relativism says that it's a doctrine that knowledge, truth, and morality exist in relation to culture, society, or historical context, and they are not absolute. I know we're Lutheran, but I bet you can finish this sentence for me. That might be true for you, but it's not... Yeah, you know it, right? That kind of sums up relativism. Now, before we go get a big old dog pile and say what's wrong with relativism, I'd like to again step outside of being Lutheran for just a second and consider, and not just consider, I'm going to ask for a little bit of input from you. Let's consider what's right. With all of these, there's rightness about this. Humanism. There is good, I think, inside us. We're not totally depraved, but it's not all good. Right? Science already said it's good. Pluralism. Respecting other religions. I think that's good. And relativism has good in it, I think, as well. So I'm going to throw this out to you guys. What are some good things that you'd see about relativism? That's the worst. Pastor Mike, you make us get outside our comfort zone all the time. What's a good thing about relativism? Surely there's something. Okay. Okay, you can coexist with different ideas, political ideas even. Can libertarians live with Democrats, Republicans? I don't even know what some of these things are. Yes. So your peace that is supposed to come from this. I think that's absolutely right. Anybody else? One more time. The temperature of the room, like it keeps people... Okay. All right. Well, I prepared a couple things right here. Here's some... about relativism. I think it gives us freedom. You know, God gave us free will, and relativism really is all about respecting the freedom of somebody else to believe what they want. And that is a good thing. Even if we abuse it, it's a good thing. And I think even though it may not actually avoid conflict, the desire is certainly to avoid conflict, because I don't have to force you to believe what I do. I can accept that you believe something different. Well, we're going to take a look at a video. We're going to get set up here, which will be a small miracle, by the way. You would just not even believe the troubles we had this morning. It was challenging. I love the way God gives us some...
There's been a lot of talk about identity lately, but how far does it go? And is it possible to be wrong? We went to the University of Washington to find out.
Are you aware of the debate happening in Washington State around the ability to access bathrooms, locker rooms, spas based on gender identity and gender expression?
I think people should be able to have access to the facility.
I think bathrooms could and potentially should be gender neutral, because there doesn't need to be a classification for differences.
I think people definitely should have the ability to go...
Yep, sorry, I stopped it.
To whichever locker room they want.
I feel like at least public universities should do their best to accommodate for those who do not have a specific gender identity.
You know, whether you identify as male or female and whether your sex at birth is matching to that, you should be able to utilize a resource.
So if I told you that I was a woman, what would your response be?
Good for you. Okay. Like, yeah.
Nice to meet you. I'd be like, what? Really?
I don't have a problem with it.
I'd ask you how you came to that conclusion.
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would your response be?
I mean, I might be a little surprised, but I'd say, good for you. Like, yeah, be who you are.
I would maybe think you had some Chinese ancestor.
I would ask you how you similarly came to that conclusion and why you came to that conclusion.
I would have a lot of questions, just because on the outside I would assume that you're a white man.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would your response be?
I wouldn't believe that immediately.
I probably wouldn't believe it, but I mean, it wouldn't really bother me that much to go out my way and tell you, no, you're wrong. I'd just be like, oh, okay, he wants to say he's 7 years old.
If you feel seven at heart, then so be it. Yeah, good for you.
So if I wanted to enroll in a first grade class, do you think I should be allowed to?
Probably not, I guess. I mean, unless you haven't completed first grade up to this point and for some reason need to do that now.
If that's where you feel like mentally you should be, then I feel like there are communities that would accept you for that.
I would say, so long as you're not hindering society and you're not causing harm to other people, I feel like that should be an okay thing.
If I told you I'm 6'5", what would you say?
That I would question.
Why?
Because you're not. No, I don't think you're 6'5".
If you truly believe you're 6'5", I don't think it's harmful. I think it's fine if you believe that. It doesn't matter to me if you think you're taller than you are.
So you'd be willing to tell me I'm wrong?
I wouldn't tell you you're wrong.
No, but I say that I don't think that you are.
I feel like that's not my place as like another human to say someone is wrong or to draw lines or boundaries.
No, I mean, I wouldn't just go like, oh, you're wrong, like, that's wrong to believe in it, because, I mean, again, it doesn't really bother me what you want to think about your height or anything.
So, I can be a Chinese woman.
You... sure.
but I can't be a 6'5" Chinese woman.
Yes.
If you thoroughly debated me or explained why you felt that you were 6'5", I feel like I would be very open to saying that you were 6'5", or Chinese, or a woman.
It shouldn't be hard to tell a 5'9 white guy that he's not a 6'5 Chinese woman. But clearly it is.
Sorry. So, wow. Shouldn't really be that hard, should it, to tell a 5'9 guy? Interesting that we're going to draw the line on height, but not on race or gender or just arbitrary. A lot of I feels in that, too. I don't know if you noticed that. Now, I chose that in particular because it was a little easier. I'm going to talk about a couple other videos that I played with for a while and thought about doing, but that one's kind of fun. It's kind of harmless, but it shows how really ridiculous this debate gets to be. Before we go into that anymore, I want to kind of draw a line here where we're talking about different kinds of relativism, because not everybody is that committed to relativism, right? And we have a couple different kinds here. We have cognitive relativism, and we have moral relativism. Cognitive relativism is saying that there are no absolutes of any kind, that you can't say someone is wrong that they're a 6'5 Chinese woman when they're clearly a 5'9 white guy. And not too many people outside the University of Washington, or other universities probably around the world, easy to beat up on them, but I think this is probably pretty popular. But not too many people would really buy into that anywhere, right? I mean, outside of a university where everything is sort of theoretical, if you stop somebody on the street, you're going to run into a lot of people who just go, what, are you stoned? They're not going to buy that at all. But moral relativism, on the other hand, is where morality becomes really flexible, where I say what's right for you is not necessarily right for me, and I get to decide absolutes there because there aren't any absolutes. And that, if you think about it, is really common and really popular today. You're not going to be able to find very many people at all who will absolutely say this is right and this is wrong. And we run into the same kind of trouble when we refuse to take any kind of stand, or when we recognize that there's something that's outside of ourselves that can decide what's right and what's wrong. But you see what's attractive about it, though, don't you? You don't really want to be told. I mean, these people were completely incapable of saying, I wouldn't tell you you're wrong. It's like Fonzie in Happy Days. I wouldn't tell you you're not willing, you're not capable of telling another person that they're wrong. And that kind of feels okay with me. I don't like to hear that I'm wrong. But where does it end up? Especially morally, where does it end up? When we were in Haiti, you know, I noticed that there is an attitude in Haiti, morally speaking, that if you have two of something, I should have one of those. You may give it to me or I might take it. But it's right that I should have one of those. I'm riding around with Pastor Daniel and past part of his property, he's got a mango tree, and there's some guy throwing rocks up into the tree to go steal fruit from him. And Daniel just says, everybody steals from Pastor Daniel. It's just the way things are. So when you start to come in conflict with me thinking morality is this way and you think morality is that way, well, you can see the trouble that comes from that, right? Say, you think it's not right for me to steal for you, and I say, well, you know, that may not be right for you, but I find that it really is right for me to steal from you. So you have the right to decide your own morality, but I have the right to decide mine. G.K. Chesterton, a theologian from a few years ago, wrote this. Before you move any fence, always pause long enough to ask why it was put there in the first place. Anybody else get the feeling that today we're just lifting fences right and left, and we're not only not asking why it was there, I don't know if we're even pausing. We just tell ourselves, that's not right for me. And we're just so anxious to remove all the barriers we possibly can. And yet, there's something that's beautiful about relativism. I just can't quite get over it. The acceptance, the freedom, you know, the lack of judgment that we put on ourselves. Those are good things. Now, I looked, I said before, I didn't immediately want to use that. That's the example that that Zacharias uses in his book. So I looked it up, and it was good because it was kind of harmless, you know. But there's some other ones out there that really kind of bite you. There's one at Evergreen College, another nearby college. A video where they normally have this event on campus called Blackout, where all the people of color just don't show up one day. It's a way to say, this is what it would be like without us. And this year, they decided, a group of students decided, you know what? What we would like is for it to be a whiteout, where no white people show up. And there was one teacher who said, you know, you can decide that you're not going to show up, but you can't say none of the white people can show up. You can't ban them from campus. That's not okay. And he was immediately branded as intolerant and a racist, and people were protesting his office, and I mean, really mobbing him. And I kind of wanted to show that. They ended up demanding that this professor, who was by no means, there's nobody who's conservative on this campus. I guess I should say that in the first place. There's like the ultra-liberals and the ones who are more liberal than that. I mean, it's crazy, crazy liberal. And yet this guy who had just a modicum, just a tiny bit of reality, was immediately isolated, and they demanded that he was fired. They took over the president's office. These students just take over the president's office, demanding that he be fired, held him captive in his own office, wouldn't let him go to the bathroom. And I wanted to show this to you, but I realized you would get too mad watching this, because it just infuriates you. So I found this other video that I kind of wanted to do as well, where the debate is transgender athletes in the Olympics. And, you know, we have to make not just bathrooms, but if transgender people are going to be able to do everything that everybody else is going to be able to do, they have to be able to compete in whatever gender event they want to. So they had some female athletes come on and say, look, here's the reality of the situation. There are approximately 2,000 men in the world today who can run a 100-meter dash faster than the fastest woman is able to do so. And all one of those men has to do is just go, I identify as a woman, and he gets to race there. And this is what you're proposing? That's not right. That's not fair. With no surgery, you know, no medical anything at all. And moreover, even if they were to go under some kind of surgical procedure, just going through puberty, men just add muscle mass in a different way. This is just science. And then a guy comes on and demands. I mean, listens to all this science and then just says, you have to treat, there's no avoiding it. You have to treat transgender people the same as everybody else and give them all the rights that anybody else has. And I realize that this is just sports. And yet I'm too angry at the end of this to put this on you either. What happens when my reality isn't just limited to me? How do we ever sort this out? Bible. Book. It's a dumpster fire. It is such a mess. You have conflict that is just every bit as absurd as any of the videos that I talked about. Because everybody is doing not what God thinks is right, but what they think is right. There's a truth that exists outside ourselves, and we may bristle at it. It's not always fun to embrace it. But it's a thing that keeps us grounded because it's a truth that's based in love. You heard of Jim Crow laws? You remember those when we were studying American history? where freed slaves go through all this ridiculous stuff. They were passed. That's a truth that was outside ourselves, but it wasn't a truth that was based in love. Quite the reverse. But when I was a kid, we had a law that said you can't take candy from a stranger in a van. That was a truth that was outside myself. And even if they had a Baby Ruth candy bar, and I really wanted to take that candy, I'd bristle at that. But that was a truth that came out of love. And you see the difference. It's all the difference, really, in the world. See, the world is set up where we have the freedom to choose basically whatever options are available to us. But we're not free from the consequences of those actions. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of an old naval battle. You have ships that are shooting cannons at each other. You notice they're always right next to each other, right? Have you seen that before? Cannons will go a long way. You know why they can only fire when they're right next to each other? It's because that other ship isn't just moving up and down. It is moving up and down, but you know what? So are you. And when you don't have a ground, when you're not stable yourself, it makes it impossible to get the right aim and to really accomplish the things that you're trying to accomplish. From land, maybe you could hit a moving boat, but when you're moving as well, it's like trying to take a picture inside a bouncy house. Everything, including you, is moving. That's what happens when everyone does what's right in their own eyes. So, how do we connect with the relativists? How do we deal with relativism? Well, there's a few truths I think that we've applied to most of the different isms that we've gone through, and I'd like to just begin with avoiding apathy. It's so easy to do what all of those students were doing, right? If you want to believe that, it doesn't hurt me. You just go and do that, and it seems like freedom, right? It seems like a lack of judgment, and it kind of is, but it's also a lack of concern or compassion. You know, somebody even actually bothered to say, as long as it doesn't hurt someone else. But what if it hurts the person who's believing whatever crazy nonsense is in question? Well, you have to have compassion in order to do that. You can't be like my favorite Barbara Billingsley line ever from Airplane. Chump don't want no help, chump don't get no help. Some of you remember that. Right? Just go and do whatever you want. Believe whatever you want. That's not what we're called to do. We're called to love our neighbor. And sometimes that means wading in there. Not necessarily judging them. Not forcing our opinion on them. But actually loving them. Remember, there's a spiritual reality that says everybody lives forever somewhere. Where is that destination for all of us? It's not a place, it's a person. And we should care not just about the people who are closest to us, but all the people that we know. If you think about it, do you want anyone you know or don't know to live apart from God forever? I just finished reading C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, and he said in it that there's two kinds of people in the world. There's the kind of people that say, to God, your will be done. And there's a kind of people that God says to them eventually, your will be done. And we think it's a great thing when we don't have to do God's will, but it's actually the worst thing to be separated from in that way. So the second thing, when we don't just embrace apathy and not care about these folks, is to avoid you need to's. And forcing our own reality on them. That's the whole reason people embrace relativism in the first place. So we can have conversations, but let's don't just jump to, you know, here's a problem with you. This is stupid. You can't believe that. You can't do this. You have to do that. Instead, what I would suggest is to ask questions. So much better in a conversation. Not to make statements, but to ask questions about what they believe, or maybe the conclusions of what they believe. We've given these questions a few times in this series, but since it's been a while, I'll refresh you. We need to ask questions about origin, where we came from, about destiny, where we're headed to. For a relativist, there can be a lot of different answers there. And what makes you think that? Without judgment, again, big question, I think, is morality. How do you decide what is right for you? What happens if I decide something different? The same kind of questions that we had here. How do you resolve that when my truth collides with your truth? How can we look outside ourselves to find something that is greater than that? And then finally, purpose. Do we have a purpose greater than just embracing our own truth? But finally, the thing that we need to do, maybe more than anything else, if we're going to make statements at all, I would say it's this: it's to share Jesus. That's the best thing that we have. Really, it's the only thing that we have. I also read another book lately. It had this great story in it about this courtroom drama where this guy's on trial for murder, but they don't have a body. Now, if you don't know, without an actual body, you have to have a really strong set of circumstantial evidence. And in this case, they did. Circumstantial evidence was so strong that there was no doubt in anyone's mind that the guy was guilty. And the defense attorney could tell that he was losing this case, so at some point he decides he's going to go for broke. So he stands up and addresses the jury and says, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I know that you think that my client is guilty, but I'm telling you he is not. And to prove it, to prove that this is all just circumstantial nonsense, at exactly 12:30, the victim, the alleged victim, is going to walk through that door. And then you will have to find my client innocent." It's 5 minutes until 12:30. And so he sits back down and turns, looks at the door, and all the jury looks, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait. And sure enough, 12:30 comes, and 12:30 goes, and nobody walks to that door. And the defense attorney stands back up and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I watched you, and I saw that you all watched that door. And that means that you had a doubt that this man was actually killed. And that means that you need to find my client. The judge will instruct you that if you have a reasonable doubt, then you have to find my client, not guilty." And he rests his case. Well, the jury gets up, and they go deliberate, and they come back 5 minutes later with a verdict of guilty. And afterwards, the defense attorney comes up and says, "I watched you. How could you find him guilty? I watched you. You watched the door." And one of the people on the jury says, "Yeah, but we watched you too. And you didn't look at the door. And your client did not look at the door either. So we knew that you had no expectation at all of that man walking through that door." And the moral of the story is, you can't give what you don't have. Friends, we only have Jesus. That's the only thing that we have to offer people. And if you don't know him that well, and if you're thinking, "You know, I have eternity to get to know Jesus," that means we have very little to offer people. So if not for you, maybe for the relativist in your life, would you spend more time getting to know Jesus so that we will have the one thing that can save anyone from anything, even ourselves? Knowing Jesus and allowing others to know him as well. Would you pray with me, please? Oh, Father, as we navigate all these different rationalizations, all these isms where we take something that's good and we warp it, God. And let's face it, we are guilty of this as well. There's hints of this inside the church just as well as outside the church. Would you help us, Lord? Would you help us to see it first in ourselves and then in others? And would you lead us back to yourself, the source of all that's good and all that's right? And give us the thing that we need to help others, and that is you yourself. May I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.